The name of the new book is I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, Memoirs of a Middle Eastern Funny Man. It's a great pleasure to welcome Maz Jobrani to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being on.
Very nice to have you with us. At what point did you say, I think there is a story to tell here and I would like to share it with other people?
You know, it was interesting because I had my manager talking to me about it because I would tell him stories about traveling the world and doing stand-up, especially in the Middle East. And he kept saying, you know, this is something that could be in a book. And I kept kind of putting it off until we went out and pitched. The editor at Simon & Schuster also thought there was a story there. And she actually was the one who suggested that we take each chapter and make it a different city and use that as the launching pad of every story. So it was the encouragement of others, and I finally did it.
At what point, you were how old when you came to this country?
I came to America in late 78. I was 6 years old. Originally we stayed in New York for a little bit, and then I ended up growing up in Northern California and moving down to Los Angeles later.
So you read a lot about this, of what it's like to fit into that adopted culture. At what point did you realize that you were indeed different and had to fit in? Was that immediate?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would always notice the differences. I never felt fully American like some of my friends when I grew up. I mentioned this, but it's true. It's like some of my friends were named guys like, you know, Brett and Jesse and Jason and Ryan, and when I would go to their homes, it just felt like a different experience than my home, where, you know, it felt like a school. We were able to get along and be the same, but then when people would come to my house, my immigrant parents and the smell of the foods would give away that I come from another part of the world that's very different, exotic, and who knows what, you know, it was all fine as well until, you know, the hostage situation happened. And that's when you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, being Iranian ain't cool. And that's what happened.
you talk about trying to convince the school bully that you're not involved in the Iran hostage crisis.
Yeah. You know, that story comes from just, you know, kids bully each other. And I was in the fourth grade. There was a sixth grader who back then would call me an effing Iranian. And that was the term that people would call you. And in the book, I jokingly say I would try and tell him that I'm not even Iranian. I'm Italian. You know, just try to lay low. You know, I had to deal with a little bit of bullying.
There's so many things I guess you don't even think of that, and this I guess speaks volumes to the young minds, to the pre-teen mind that is able to think this way. But so Flock of Seagulls have a new song out. Probably most people, not a big deal, but for you it becomes like a real pain in the neck.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because I went from the Iran hostage crisis, watching Ted Koppel on the news every night, just saying, you know, day 142, you know, day one. And I'm going, oh, how long is this thing going to keep going? And how did he get his hair to stand like that? So I go from that to suddenly Flock of Seagulls comes out with a song, Iran So Far Away, which seems like a very innocuous song. But if you're from Iran, you know, if you're from Iran, people are going, hey, Iran so far away, hey, you're Iranian. And I'm going, it's not Iranian, it's Iranian, get it right. And it was one thing after the next. I mean, after that, you get the movie Not Without My Daughter, which was with Sally Field, about how she married an Iranian man and how in America he was the sweetest guy in the world. And then when they go to Iran, he just turns into this a total dictator. So it was one thing after the next, and none of it was cool. You know, I always say how, like, you know, when you're British, you have that accent, you're kind of cool. You got James Bond, you got a lot of good things going for you. You know, when you're Iranian, you know, we had the Ayatollah and then we have these other things that come out, you know, now like nuclear nuclear negotiations. None of it's cool is what I'm trying to say.
How did 9/11, was that a major change? Or did it intensify what you had already experienced?
It intensified. You know, one of the things I mentioned in the book, and this is true, it's like I started taking offense at, sometimes we'd be doing like morning radio and the DJ would say, oh, you know, 9/11 really helped your career, didn't it? And I would say, you know, that's kind of racist what you're saying, because I wanted this, and I would tell them, I'd say, no, I've been dealing with these issues since I came to America. You know, Iran suddenly became public enemy number one for a while, and then it would come in and out. But there was always things going on between Iran and the U.S. And then September 11th just accentuated everything again and brought it to the forefront. Even though the hijackers were Saudis and Egyptians, you know, there we are at the speech that Bush gives, and he puts Iran in the axis of evil. So it was kind of like, boy, like no matter who does what, we end up getting thrown into it. And the whole time I'm like sitting here screaming, like, look, I'm American. And I'm originally from Iran, and a lot of Iranian people are good people. So it's like, why is there this animosity anyway? But it just exists. And I think a lot of that is just what people see in the news. And so when something like September 11th happens, or when an organization like ISIS comes to the forefront again, it feels like, you know, all the good favor that we had going kind of goes away, and we kind of get categorized again in that category of the bad guy.
Does it play out with people who don't know you, or is it? I mean, is that the majority of it, of just people who are on the outside, or do you face this even within, you know, your circle and people that you're working with?
You know, I would say that, look, I personally, because I grew up in America, I don't have an accent. When you look at me just physically, some people don't even know where I'm from. You know, I could be, you know, Mexican or Brazilian or Latino or Middle Eastern. You kind of don't know. So I personally, after that, the bullying in the fourth grade, I didn't get as much discrimination or bullying or profiling. You know, there were other incidents that happened where I was there with a friend and something would happen. I remember in high school, we were with some friends and we walked into a restaurant and one of our friends happened to be speaking Persian. And there was a guy, this big guy in there. We were all high schoolers and there's this big adult, like 6'6" dude. And he just turns around and goes, hey, speak American. This is America. And we go, what? And the next thing you know, the guy wants to fight us and it's just getting carried away. And so there've been incidents like that I've been a part of. Or my mother, after September 11th, had somebody tell her to go back to her country because my mother's got an accent. And so it feels like a lot of times, even though I personally try to hope, I try to think that people are educated and they know the differences and they know not to be small-minded, I think the unfortunate truth is that this exists out there. And quite often, it's people that don't know me and don't know others like me. But, you know, people that also kind of know you a little bit sometimes say things. Like I said, when you go into a radio station in the morning to promote a show you're doing in a town as a comedian, and the morning DJ, you know, you're having a great conversation, and then he throws something at you, like what I said earlier, which is like, you know, September 11th really helped your career. You go, wow, I can't believe you kind of say that and actually believe that. You know, so it's out there. It's out there.
You do write in the epilogue, which I found interesting, that I jotted down, that now that I've written this book, I realize that a lot of my issues have been created in my own head.
Yeah.
How so?
Yeah. Well, I just feel like, look, I feel like in the book I talk about when I would travel after September 11th and just scared that I was going to get profiled and stopped and, you know, taken to Guantanamo. I hadn't done anything, but I think that what had happened was I was watching so much news and reading about people shooting Indian Sikhs that I felt like, okay, there's a major emotion running through this country right now. And even though I haven't done anything, when I go to the airport, I just felt guilty. And I felt like they're going to stop me for something. So that's me in my own head just freaking out as I go through the metal detector. You know, later, when I'm touring and wherever I keep showing up in places where acts of terror are happening, and I start, at one point I really do consider, I go, could it be that there's some organization that's sending their jihadists to follow my touring schedule and just do stuff wherever I am? I mean, as silly as that sounds, when you show up in, I mean, what happened was I landed in Denver and they just arrested a cab driver who they were accusing of trying to do terrorist plots. Then I was flying to Philadelphia and they found this lady named Jihad Jane in Philadelphia. Then I'm going, then I'm in New York and the Pakistani guy tries to blow a car bomb, a time bomb in Times Square the same weekend, the same night I'm performing there. Even when I'm in Austin, Texas, getting ready to drive, and I turn on the news, and it wasn't even a Middle Eastern or a Muslim guy. It was a white guy who flew his plane into the IRS building. And I'm going, really? I'm like, I just keep showing up around these things. So, you know, it gets in your head. And you go, am I somehow involved with this crap? And that's what I was saying, is because then my conclusion in the book is I said, no, I'm just traveling a lot. And the world is crazier than it's ever been. Or maybe it's just as crazy, but now we have a lot more reporting of it, you know. So that's what that was alluding to.
Maaz Jobrani is our guest. His new book, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, published by Simon & Schuster. That idea of playing a terrorist on TV brings us to which you talk about a lot in the book, and that is how this affected your career. We are certainly, I think, Hollywood is known for stereotyping. So at what point did you say, let me back up. What was the impact that you think your background had on your career originally?
Well, you know, it's funny because, I grew up in America, and at the age of 12, I started doing plays. And in junior high school, I got to be, I believe the first play I did was Guys and Dolls. I was just in the chorus. But after that, I was I played Little Abner in a play. In high school, somebody wrote a Batman musical. I was Batman. And I'm like, this is great, you know, you get to act and be all these great characters. And then when I come to Hollywood, early on, after a few auditions for just regular guy parts, I start going on auditions for terrorist parts. And at first I thought, okay, this is not a big deal, you know, it was just one or two. But then you realize that when they find out, when casting finds out you're of Middle Eastern descent, and when your agents know, obviously, you're of Middle Eastern descent, they're constantly submitting you for these terrorist parts, because that's a majority of the parts that are out there for people of my background are terrorist parts. And so early in my career, I took a part as a terrorist in a Chuck Norris movie of the week. And at first I thought, okay, I felt a little uncomfortable doing it.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know what, I will go there, I'll do this part, and I will bring, I'll show through my acting why this guy's doing what he's doing. I'm going to get it right. I'm going to do it right. And I went, I was playing an Afghan who goes to Chicago to blow up a building. And this is pre-9/11. And I'm sitting there at the wardrobe fitting, and they say, here's your shirt, here's your pants, here's your turban. And I stopped the wardrobe lady. I said, actually, you know, let's get this right. I said, you know, Afghans in America don't wear turbans. I said, you know, Indian Sikhs wear turbans. And she basically was like, dude, this is a Chuck Norris movie. What are you talking about? You know? And it was this back and forth. And finally, I was like, do me a favor. Tell the producers I've done my research. I want to get it right. And the next day when I go to my fitting, there's my shirt, there's my pants, and there's a scarf. And I go, see, you talk to the producers. They said you should wear a scarf instead of a turban. I said, I will gladly be the scarf-wearing terrorist. And she goes, no, that's not the scarf. That's the turban. You just got to wrap it up around your head. So I just felt like an idiot, and that's when I took the stand and I came back and I told my agents no more terrorist parts. And there was one more that came up, which was for the TV show 24, where they contacted me and said, hey, we want you to play terrorist. I said, no thanks. And they go, but he changes his mind halfway through the mission. So I was like, ah, the ambivalent terrorist. I was like, I could try that. But then after that, I said no more. And it was actually a really good moment in my career to be able to do that. And I haven't gone on another terrorist audition since. And that was like 12, 13 years ago.
How many episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm did you do?
I did one episode of Curb. I did the season finale when Larry went to Broadway to be in the producers.
And he right.
was staying, yeah, he was staying at a hotel, and I played the Indian Sikh in that. And in that, actually, I didn't mind wearing the Indian Sikh turban because I was an Indian Sikh. And they actually comically made it a really big turban because part of the joke was that Larry gives me tickets to the show. I show up. I found at the show he discovers that I found David Schwimmer's watch, and I claim that it's mine, and we get in a little wrestling match. And then when I go to sit down to watch the show, I'm blocking the view of his cousin, played by Richard Kind, with my big turban. So that was fun and silly, and I loved doing it, and I would do it again in a heartbeat.
And Bancroft and Mel Brooks were in that finale as well. Did you get to work with them? Or
I did not get to work. Yeah. It was an honor to even be in the same episode. And actually, I know Mel Brooks' son, Max, who wrote World War Z. I did one of the voices for the audio book, and he also co-wrote a pilot that we did for Comedy Central called The Watch List, which was basically like the Chappelle Show with Middle Easterners. So that's the closest I've come to ever meeting Mel Brooks, and yeah, that was a great honor to be a part of that show.
Let's talk a little bit about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And you first did the show when?
The first time I did Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I believe my son, I think, was 1.5. So it must have been 5 years ago. 5 years ago. Wow, that just goes way too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was about four or five years ago. And I remember being so excited about it because I had been listening to it, and I was a big fan. And then they originally had me on as a call-in guest, because I guess they knew me from the Access to Evil comedy tour. So I was the, you know, celebrity call-in. And I, you know, I was like, wow, you guys are really reaching the bottom of the bucket here looking for celebrities. If I'm the celebrity call-in, but I must've been the only person in America available at that time. But it was great. And then after that, they asked me to be a panelist, and it has been a blast. I really love doing it. And I always encourage people. I say, if you ever get a chance to watch a live taping of it, do, because we record almost 2 hours and they have to edit it down to 50 minutes. So you miss a lot when you don't see it live.
And now you're fairly regular, right? I mean, I don't know if you have a posted schedule or how that works, or you're contracted to a certain number of dates, but it's fairly regular.
Yeah, it is fairly regular. What it basically, they base it around your availability. And I think they just rotate all the different panelists in whenever they can. You know, I'm constantly touring on live dates, so I just base it around that. I'd say I could probably get on there around 10 times a year, so that's it. And I would do more if I could. I mean, one of the difficulties is I live in L.A., and we tape out of Chicago, so it's one of those things where you're up really early, flying to Chicago, getting a nap in, and doing the show that night, and then flying back.
And I assume it brings you and introduces you to a whole new audience.
Absolutely. It's been pretty amazing. First of all, it's amazing how many people listen to the show. You know, you do something and you don't know that people are seeing it or hearing it. I did two TED Talks. I had no idea when I first did the first TED Talk what it was. And now I've been recognized in places from TED Talks. And Wait, Wait is another one of those where I was doing a show in Stockholm, Sweden, and a woman came up and said, you know, I heard you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Absolutely, it's brought a whole other audience to me, and I love it. It's a great exposure to an audience that I think is a smart audience, and they want to hear about other perspectives of people from that part of the world. So I think that they're curious about my stand-up as well.
And it is, I assume, it's also an extension of your great interest in the news. I mean, you obviously have to be very well read and know what's going on in the world.
Absolutely. I love the news. I studied political science undergraduate, and I started a PhD program in political science and dropped out. So I love politics. I love the news. And whenever we do Wait, Wait, it's funny. I try and do a cramming because I have two young kids. So a lot of times I don't even, you know, I'll go a few days without knowing what's going on. And then I just have to cram the news. And what's interesting is when you study for Wait, Wait, you got to look at sites like, you know, the Huffington Post and CNN.com and BBC or whatever you want. But you also got to look at some outlandish news because they always find one or two pieces of news that you would never even hear about. So it's a little crazy, you know, but it's fun. And the thing I learned, too, about Wait, Wait is, you know, my role, I think the year they brought me on, they brought on a few other people, including Alonzo Bowden. And a few other comedians. I think part of our role is also to just just have fun with it and try and be funny as much as we can as well, as opposed to necessarily winning every week, you know?
Right. Is there a pairing that you especially enjoy if you see that you're going to be on the panel with somebody that you are very especially happy about?
You know, I've enjoyed all the panelists. I've ended up doing a lot with Paula, and she is just fun to watch because when she starts going, I don't know where she's going, and I just sit back and let her go and watch her. And not that I let her go. I mean, we all let her go. She just does her own thing. She is great to be on with. One time, I think, might have been me, Paula, and Brian Babylon together, and he was doing a great Obama impression, and we just kept trying to relate everything to just trying to get him to do Obama. You know, it's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun, you know.
Well, the new book is I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, Memoirs of a Middle Eastern Funny Man. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Maz Jobrani, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with the book and the future work as well. Very nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, by Maz Jobrani, published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.